welcome to the Heavy Matters podcast, the podcast where we talk about heavy and alternative music. I'm Joey, he is Venny, and for the next 40 minutes or so, you're going to be listening to us talk about two of great British heavyweights in Iron Maiden and Woking's Employ to Serve. Venny, you all right, mate?
Yep, I'm good, thank you, mate. I'm good. Had a little bit of time off work, so I've been catching up on all our new lovely music that we've been reviewing.
Yeah, it's becoming the end of the year is really kicking off, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I wonder if it's like a COVID effect that all these bands have been forced to record and they're dishing out all these albums out. So I wonder if it's going to be a tidal wave of albums, which I'm not complaining about.
No, it's finding the time because the new Enslaved EP dropped, the new Ministry album dropped, the Rivers of Nihil is coming this Friday. It's all kicking off. And talking about Rivers of Nihil, we're going to be speaking to the bassist, Bigsy, on Thursday night, which is a nice little treat.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, it'll be an interesting interview.
Owls was my number one album 2018. Very much looking forward to that. But tonight, we have got two big albums. This is, I've been so, apprehensive and anxious about this show tonight, but excited at the same time because Iron Maiden are one of our all-time favourite bands. And this is a bit of a poignant show because when we reacquainted with each other was during Maiden set at Download.
Mate. I mean, if you were to put together a joint Heavy Matters favourite band, it probably would be Iron Maiden, it's fair to say.
Yes, it would. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tool's your favourite, but if we were looking at holistically, it would be.
Absolutely. So, yeah, they clearly hold a very dear place in our heart. And, here we are as hard-nosed journalist scum to issue an unbiased and unsentimental review. So,
and also, we have Employed to Serve, who we spoke to, Justine and Sammy, on the last interview we did, and thoroughly bloody nice folk, aren't they?
Really nice human beings. Very good of them to give up their time to chat to the Heavy Matters crew. And yeah, really good interview. So check it out.
Yeah, and we had the album when we spoke to them, but we didn't reveal anything. So this will be the first time they would have heard our review on it. So, and like this show, because we've got Employed to Serve, who are flying a flag for British, underground metal, and Maiden, who have been the flag bearers for since we were even born, mate. So this is a really, really exciting show, and I am a bit nervous because the Maiden one especially, I'm worried about what you're going to think of it. But anyway, not in a bad way. Like, I'm not saying that how I think you're going to be, but I'm just, because they are our favourite band, I'm worried we might be clashing heads at some point on this. But anyway, we're going to start off with the Maiden review. But Venny, I want to take a moment, just for a minute, to put aside our mega Maiden fans' opinions for a second, right? And just toss that to the side, because we do have to be very impartial on this, and we will come back to how much we love Maiden. But just take your Maiden hat off for a second. And my question to you is, how important are Iron Maiden in the metal world?
Yeah, I mean, they are probably important. Yep. The end. I mean, I was gonna say, probably in terms of straight down line heavy metal, there are two bands in the world, and that is Iron Maiden and Metallica. UK, USA, their fans for each will proclaim why one is bigger than the other, but look, in the world as it is, there are two big heavy metal acts, and that is Iron Maiden and Metallica, and there is no denying their role now as well as historically in terms of shaping the world of heavy music, and their influence still is writ large. You know, you listen to battle metal and all the, especially European metal, that galloping bass line is still on a lot of contemporary music. So it's not like they're just consigned to the history books. I think they're still having an impact to this day.
Yep, fair enough. And my follow-up question is, why do a lot of people, I say a lot of people, why do people despise Iron Maiden, do you think? Because there is a lot of hatred, if you look on probably social media, definitely, where Iron Maiden will release an album, let's say this Senjutsu, for example, and the hatred off the back of it is unreal. Why is that?
Yeah, even amongst our small friend group, there is a definite kind of divide of the guys who really like and love Maiden and the guys that really do not like them, just in our small group. I think, and the reason people love them is also the reason why other people hate them. Maiden are, it sounds cheesy to say, but they are an institution now. They are, they have their tropes, their branding, clearly Eddie, the visuals, the stage show, the album covers, the historical themes, the theatrics, everything that your dyed-in-the-wool Maiden fan loves about them is clearly something that will switch off a lot of people about Maiden. Some people, for example, do not like Bruce's voice. They think it's too high-pitched, too operatic. Some people think the whole Eddie visual shtick is corny or cheesy. And look, I think with an impartial eye, you can see both of those criticisms. But as I say, I think it's the same reason that people absolutely love them and will cover their bodies with tattoos of Iron Maiden. It's the same reason that some people really hate them.
Talking of tattoos, just need to give a quick shout out to our mate Alex Tucker, who it's his birthday today. So shout out Alex Tucker with a massive Eddie on his arm tattooed on. Yeah, I see where you're coming from, and I think they're very valid points. And I'm going back to being a massive Maiden fan now, but I just really don't understand that people hate them so much as they do. I think when you look at Maiden playing Rock in Rio to 250,000 people and the joy it brings to them, if you look at Download, etc., perhaps maybe people think they're done now.
Yeah, maybe there's an element. I don't know, it's maybe a bit of like, why do people hate Man United? Like, you know, they've had years of just winning everything, being super successful, and a kind of riposte to that, or a kind of a poser's or hipster's reaction, is to be the sneery person that says, oh no, I hate Man United and I support, I don't know, Oxford United, and anyone who supports Man United is just a plastic football fan or whatever. Do you know, I do wonder if it's that similar begrudge. They're begrudging of Iron Maiden's success and domination. I don't know.
Okay, could be. I just thought I'd throw it out there to start with, because this is an album that will potentially divide Maiden fans for sure, but also I think the people we're talking about. So let's get onto the album itself. Their 17th album, and it's titled Senjutsu. So Benny, when Maiden announced a new album, what are you looking for in that album?
Good question. I think, look, we're 17 albums in. For me, there is a clear divide in the work. You know, that pre, I mean, there are several eras of Maiden, if you will. Yeah. But, you know, the classics, you know, very early stuff, the 80s stuff in their, what many would consider their prime, the 90s where they had a wobble, but certainly for me, the post 2000s when Bruce came back, post Brave New World, Maiden have had a certain trajectory to their albums. We've talked about in the past, certainly offline, but potentially also on the pod, of how the albums seem to be structured. And part of it is also how Maiden have grown older gracefully. You talk about them being past it, but how they have changed up their sound and what they focus on in terms of this growing old gracefully, because clearly they're not the young men who did those really fast, punky, you know, tracks on Iron Maiden and Killers. So they have clearly changed over the years. So they have moved to this more grandiose, progressive, epic slant, and that was plain to see on Book of Souls.
Just to interject there, you mentioned the post 2000 era Brave New World, and you said Bruce coming back, but you missed a vital point there that Adrian Smith
and Adrian, yeah,
also came back, and I think that was the resurgence maybe of the band, and you can tell by, you know, like you said, I mean, Brave New World is an absolutely phenomenal comeback record, and you could potentially say put Maiden back on yeah. the map. What do I look for in a Maiden album? It's a tricky one because, like you said, the earlier days they were quick. Run to the Hills was a quick hit. Aces High, etc., etc. And that post Brave New World of The Final Frontier as well and Book of Souls, they have, I say naturally, but their songs have got progressively longer. I mean, Emperor of the Clouds being 20 odd minutes as an album closer, for example, The Wild Wind Blows on Final Frontier. I wasn't expecting any change from Maiden in this album. And to be honest with you, that's what I was after. We've seen a lot of okay. bands recently make those really big jumps. Def Heaven, for argument's sake, when they went from Sunbather to Infinite Granite was too much for me. With a band that I love this much, I don't know if I could handle Maiden jumping too much. And I'll just say this before we go into the actual review, but I'm glad that they've followed up with this album on the same template as The Book of Souls.
Yeah, and going back to those big two global metal acts, Metallica, I think, have had a more difficult ride in terms of growing old gracefully. They've not been so sure of themselves, I think, as Iron Maiden have. And for them being a naturally more aggressive, you know, thrash orientated, it's been harder, I think, for them to grow old and hardwired to self-destruct. I mean, it was generally positively reviewed, but it was them trying to go back, I think, to a faster, thrashier sound, which, for my money, I'm not sure worked quite so well as certainly the Latter Day Maiden stuff. So yeah, I think it's a double jeopardy, isn't it? Do you stick or twist? Do you go with what has made you successful? Or do you try and hark back to an earlier time, when you're, you know, 20 or 30 years younger? So it's a really difficult one for bands to tread that line of stagnating or refreshing, staying the same or changing up. And it's an interesting one.
But what they have done is they have created another album which is full of stadium anthems on Senjutsu. And that is what Maiden are these days. You know, they've a set list so long that they could do a song of every album twice through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyway, coming back to the album. So Senjutsu, when you saw the release of what was coming and the Samurai Maiden, what were your initial thoughts on what the album was going to be like? And so the theme of it.
Yeah. So clearly themes have been really important over the years for Maiden. You can hark back to those early days of the Power Slave and those Eastern tinges to the music. Seventh Son of Seventh Son, and that really icy and progressive concept album. Clearly the themes are really important for Maiden albums. Coming into the modern era, you know, Matter of Life and Death was a really good example of a thematically important album. Book of Souls was interesting because, you know, they had that Aztec Inca vibe on it, but not necessarily within the songs themselves. So I think I was, you know, I saw that Japanese samurai Eddie, but I wasn't necessarily sold that they were gonna all of a sudden be playing, you know, K-pop or whatever. So
thankfully
yeah. What about yourself? Was it something that triggered your interest, tickled your fancy?
It worried's probably the wrong word, but when I did see the Japanese cover, I was like, sort of like you, not were they going to go K-pop, but was there going to be something that would lead them a different path? And I think, like Book of Souls as well, it's not really completely embedded. The song names, obviously, Strategio and the title track are clearly Japanese, but it's not, when I listen to it, if you don't read the lyrics, there's no sense of it being a fully immersive
yeah.
Japanese theme, if you know what I mean.
Agree.
So the album itself, then, it's a longie, 84 minutes, another double album, which the Book of Souls was as well. I was a big fan of the Book of Souls. I love the songwriting. I love the epicness. I've said about Empire of the Clouds. Red and the Black is another phenomenal track. What I liked about Senjutsu when I put it on first was they didn't start the album with a classic Maiden single, if you know what I mean. They didn't start it with Book of Souls had If Eternity Shall Fail, Final Frontier, The Name Escapes Me Now.
Satellite 15.
Into
El Dorado, was it?
That's the one, exactly, El Dorado. Yeah. It didn't start off like that, which was a nice surprise for me. And it was actually a very slow builder of an opening track, which it really took me by surprise, actually, because Maiden notoriously, towards this latter end of the period, do start the album off with a balls to the wall, you know.
Yeah. And in that way, I think they became slightly formulaic. So I was pleased in a way that, you know, they have changed things up, because it almost was getting to be a bit of a template that they were following, which I wasn't massively keen on. Not that I didn't like those individual songs, don't get me wrong, but I wasn't a fan of a Maiden album being 1 + 2 + 3 = you know. So I agree. It was a bit a bit different, wasn't it? The way the album kicks off.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with what you said. I would never play those singles. If I was playing, say, the Book of Souls, I would probably skip the first two songs and just listen to the longer songs that go from there. Live, however, they are fantastic. But no, I was really happy that this album started off with a non-template, like you said, and it was a slow builder. It was actually probably one of the slowest songs on the album to kick it off, which was, I suppose, a nice way to ease you into the album, considering you know that it's going to be another another hour or so long. Were you happy with the opening track? I mean, we're not going to go track by track, but just to get a sense of
I mean, for me, without revealing my cards too much, I felt the opening track was a slightly foreboding sign of what was to come. It is a slow start for me. It is a very slow start. And whilst I was pleased that they changed things up, I'm not sure that the track in itself is the strongest track on the album. And so, do you know, bury that track midway, track 7 or 8, and it might just pass you by. But it worried, slightly worried me, that first track. And I thought, you know, 8 minutes, nothing really has happened, and is this what is a sign of things to come? I was a bit concerned, I have to say.
As a counter argument, now the track after is Writing on the Wall, Stratego, which was one of the singles they released. If they'd have put Stratego first, would you have been annoyed because they've gone back to that template?
I mean, it's 5 minutes long. It's not exactly like a 2 minute. Stratego is 5 minutes long. It's not exactly a 2 minute, but it certainly picks up the pace a bit. And I wonder, actually, without it, you know, slightly contradicting what I was saying, it might have been a slightly better opener. Maybe what I'm saying is that some of the other longer tracks that come later on the album might have been a better opener. Is all I'm saying. I do not think the title track is the strongest track on the album.
Okay. And I would agree with that. I do agree with that statement. What I will say is the next three, Stratego, into Writing on the Wall, into Lost in a Lost World, is an absolute brilliant hat-trick of songs. And usually the singles, like I was saying, Eternity Will Fail, etc., etc., would not be my favourite. But this hat-trick is so good. And Lost in a Lost World is a very interesting opener, the way it's with the choir almost.
Yeah.
But it absolutely breaks into a phenomenal, typical 21st century Maiden song that will be an absolute joy to see being sung live in arenas.
Yeah. I think it's strong performances on Lost in a Lost World. I think is a really nice Adrian solo on that. I think Bruce's voice sounds is very, very strong on that. The acoustic guitars reminds me of some of the stuff they've done before, but like Afraid to Shoot Strangers and that kind of thing. I quite liked that throwback.
There's a lot of, now you've mentioned it, there is a lot of past Maiden in this album as well. You can definitely hear whether it's leftover from Book of Souls material in there. But there's also Final Frontier, which in Days of Future Past reminds me of that Final Frontier era. But also, Steve Harris's bass has a very X Factor era feel to it. It's very, do you know what I mean? You can hear it a lot more in the
it's
mix.
It's quite high strong. In the mix, yeah.
And which is brilliant because I absolutely love the X Factor and I love Steve Harris's bass in that. Obviously, Maiden have been going for so long now that obviously some things are going to remind you of them, but it was nice to see that they haven't just gone full away from the old template.
Yeah. Going back to that hat trick of songs you mentioned, for me, The Writing on the Wall is such a standout track on the album. It was released, it was the first release single, I think, from the album. And I really liked the different flavour it brought to Maiden's hallmark sound. Look, you can still tell it's very typically Maiden in its essence, but I loved that slightly Mexican tinge classic guitar to open with. It's kind of more of a country feel
folk
to it,
country,
and
yeah,
folky, and it was really different, and I really liked that. As do you know, if we got 10 tracks that sounded like track one, the title track, I think I would be in tears by the end of it. But I really, really liked The Writing on the Wall as such, you know, something that is it, you know, you mentioned certain throwbacks on this album there, you can hear tinge. I can't really think of too many tracks in the past that sounded like The Writing on the Wall. So I really like that. I really like that.
Yeah. The middle part of the album for me, The Time Machine and Darkest Hour, is my least favourite of the album. I think there's a bit of a lull there, and I wonder what the decision was behind doing a double album, whereas they could have cut out those two tracks and could have just done it as a single, one disc album.
Yeah.
I wonder what the, whether it was the record company pushing them to do this, or whether they just as a band just said, we're Iron Maiden, we can put out what we want. But those two tracks are my least favourite parts of the album. They're real, especially The Time Machine. I don't really see the fit on the album. It seems like an odd one to me. I don't know if you feel the same.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should approach the elephant in the room. What is your general feeling to Iron Maiden following The Book of Souls with another double album? Is that what you wanted? Is that what we needed?
Okay. Good point. Is it what I wanted? I will never turn my nose up to more Maiden. Is my fan Maiden. If I step away from being a mega fan, no, we didn't at all. No. And that's my answer.
I mean, coming back to what you said there, I do feel Maiden now, at their level of success, have probably got a bit of a self-editing problem going on. In that, you know, they are a huge band now. They have seen great success and a devoted fan base respond to these ever-lengthening tracks, ever-lengthening albums. Press saying it's the best they've ever sounded, superlatives coming in, as well as having quite strong egos within the bands. You know, we know what Steve Harris is like, we know what Bruce Dickinson's like, we know they'll want their own songs on the album and they won't stand. There'll be toys thrown out of the pram if anyone's saying, oh, your track's not good enough to go on the album. There will be toys being hurled out of the pram.
Yeah.
And I do fear that they do have a problem with editing their own stuff down. I mean, I'm just going to say it now. This album is far too long. Does not need to be this long. I'm a huge Maiden fan. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these sneery guys, but this album is too long. And that is a fact.
Yes, I agree. I do agree. It is too long. It wasn't necessary to do the two back-to-back double albums. I think Book of Souls was a nice change of a surprise coming from them. And considering Empire of the Clouds was 20 minutes long as a track on its own, it probably needed to be a double album. But I think the Time Machine, Darkest Hour.
I mean, it's just to stick up for Darkest Hour. So to break down the tracks on the album by writer, by who's written the tracks, I actually really quite like the Adrian Smith, Bruce Dickinson pen tracks on this album. Normally, I'm more of a Steve Harris type of person. I generally prefer the tracks he writes, but particularly on this album, I like the Bruce and Adrian tracks. So that is The Writing's on the Wall. Days of Future Past, I really like. I really like the kind of sharp 80s, almost classic rock feel to some of the riffs in that. And I do like The Darkest Hour, and I quite like the brooding kind of menacing nature of The Darkest Hour. I think it's a little bit different in terms of the rest of the album, in terms of its kind of lyrical content and its dynamic. So I really like those tracks. So for me, the editing problem, I'm sorry to say, is maybe on old Steve Harris on this one.
So that's the first division we've had, that you like those tracks, I don't. So I assume then you're talking about Death of the Celts.
Yeah, for me.
The final three tracks you're talking, Death of the Celts, Parchment.
Not saying I do not like any parts of those three tracks, but to finish the album with three tracks, 33 minutes of Steve Harris pen tracks, I feel is a little bit excessive. Death of the Celts, for me, is a poor man's Klansman.
Oh, good God.
Joey, you tell me you would take the Death of the Celts over the Klansman, and I will eat my hat.
Of course I wouldn't.
No.
You backed me into a corner. No one packs Joey into a corner. No, I agree. I agree with that. I think, however, this is a hill I will die on. Hell on Earth is the standout track on this album. It encapsulates everything that I love about Iron Maiden. It's a lengthy track, which, you know, I've already said I'm a big fan of, but it just has that, everything made about it. It's slow, a slow intro, but then it's got these hooky, galloping riffs, massive, massive lead vocals from Bruce, and it has a real Maiden factor for me. And what I mean by that is Iron Maiden have this real knack of finding me and bringing my mood up when I need it. There's certain Maiden tracks where, and Hell on Earth is one of them, where when I put it on, whatever the mood I'm in, I'm going to be singing, hanging out the window, singing along to this, air drumming, whatever. And this song has a real Maiden hook for me.
Yeah, I like Hell on Earth. I like the sound, for me, sounds a bit like Blood Brothers, I think, when it kicks in. I like that about it. It's got a real long lead up, and I don't mind that. It's got 3.5 minutes before any vocals kick in. I don't hate that. I quite like it. And it's got really upbeat kind of bridge before it goes into the chorus. So, yeah, it's slightly difficult for me to say what needs to be taken off this album, because actually there's very little on here that I hate. I don't hate anything on there, but it is too long. And for me, listening to it in a marathon single session, I find slightly difficult. And I find, and this is potentially the most damning thing I might say about it, is, you know, it just can fade a little bit into the background and just sound like Iron Maiden. And that's a really, it hurts me to say it. It really does, because you know how much I love this band. But I find having the whole piece on it just after a while can just fade and just sound like Iron Maiden. It sounds very Iron Maiden-y. And that's what us super fans love about the band. But I find it just, it is too long and there, and it, my attention can drift a little bit from it.
I don't think the songs are as strong as they were on the Book of Souls. When I talk about like Red and the Black.
Red and Black, yeah.
Tears of the Clown.
Yeah.
Emperor of the Clouds, I'll say it again, but I don't think the songwriting's as good on that. And I think that's, and I'm actually wondering, do you feel the same about that when you listen to Book of Souls? Do you have that, you sort of fade out? Or
no, no, because that was kind of the first of its type. Right. But this is following immediately off the back of it, and I feel almost a bit of fatigue following on from it. Look, I love Maiden epics. I love it. I mean, and I used to love when you would get Power Slave and have Rime of the Ancient Mariner as this big kind of monolith that stands in the middle of the album. I think they've done it brilliantly over the years, even, you know, going through Fear of the Dark. Then you've got on the last
Sign of the Cross.
Sign of the Cross, incredible. Reincarnation of Benjamin Breeze, one of my favourite modern day tracks. And I look, I love the epic, but what I'm not sure I like is a track of 10 of them, because I just feel they lose what makes them epic, if that makes sense. They lose that monolithic one track that stands in the middle as this big centre point. When you've got 10 of them, does that make sense? So whilst I don't like the Maiden formula, so to speak, what it did mean was that it provided a bit of dynamics and contrast between the short tracks and the longer tracks. Whereas I feel in the last two albums, but mostly on this one, that they do lose a bit of the effect by making all of the tracks, none of the tracks are under 5 minutes, I think. Mm. I mean, that for me is an issue. And there is multiple tracks that are over 10 minutes. That is an issue. And like you say, if you, and I agree, if you feel the strong songwriting is not as strong as Book of Souls, then they're not really backing up the fact that they've got these long tracks.
Yeah, and that was my, I just wondered about you saying whether it held your attention on the Book of Souls, and that my point stands that I think the songs are stronger on Book of Souls.
I agree.
There are definitely some songs that I would take out of Book of Souls and put from Senjutsu into Book of Souls, if you know what I mean. But I think overall, before we just go into our ranks, as we'll be here all night, what Maiden have now is another four or five songs that they could chuck in and make their set list even stronger. There's even a rumour going that Bruce has mentioned that it would be an ideal album to play in its entirety.
I mean, I for one would not like that.
Don't beat around the bush. Say it too.
I mean, I do not think that would work well. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we've seen Maiden quite recently, not on the Legacy Tour, but before that, they played an awful lot from the Book of Souls, and I thought they kind of just about got away with that. I felt the crowd of 60,000 people at Donington weren't necessarily with them for that. So I'm not sure that would be said. You know, you get a lot of casual Maiden fans who have got their Trooper t-shirt who go and want to listen to Run to the Hills, and you know, that is not us. We are much, you know, we go much deeper than that with our relationship with Maiden. That is not us. But I'm also not at the stage where I would want to listen to many of their albums in their entirety, but especially not this one.
Fair enough. We'll see. Download next year.
Yeah.
So,
I've got a couple of questions for you, my man.
Oh God.
It's a horrible question, but even
start it with that.
Even say, I'm not going to say where would you put this album in the Parthenon of Maiden releases, because that we could be here all night, and that is a difficult one just to think of off the hoof. But say the last five Maiden albums. So where
Matter of Life and Death?
Or why don't we go
Bravely Unmasked? Let's do.
Yeah,
well, let's go
fine. Modern era. Why don't you say if you don't mind, because this is off the hoof, and I have sprung it on you a little bit.
You don't have
to rank them all, but I'm just saying what finishes above it or what finishes below it, depending on, you know.
Finishes above it. Okay. Finishes above it, definitely Book of Souls. The Final Frontier for me, because it's actually a very emotional album. I proposed to my wife.
I mean, me too. I mean, I know. I
proposed to you.
Did you not? No, I agree. And even just without that sentimentality, I feel it's better.
Yeah.
Just, I do feel it's better.
So, Book of Souls, The Final Frontier, Brave New World, definitely. I would say Senjutsu is better than Dance of Death.
Yeah, me and too, potentially.
Between A Matter
because
of Life
I
and Death,
dislike that album.
But... It's head on head. Now, but Dance of Death, we saw that in Cardiff, and it has some great tracks in it. Passchendaele being the standout one. But,
absolutely.
Sorry,
yeah.
that's a side note. We could have been here all night going over that.
Yeah.
I think Dance of Death is below it. A Matter of Life and Death is probably below it as well, I think.
Ooh.
I don't know. I'm torn because there are some great tracks on A Matter of Life and Death, but then there's also some great tracks on Senjutsu. So I'll probably put them tied for now until I've had a bit more time to digest.
Yeah, yeah. I've sprung it on you, mate. So, sorry about that. Yeah, no, I broadly agree. I would definitely have Matter of Life and Death above it. So for me, it's potentially only Dance of Death that it usurps. And I just have and even there, I do feel like Passchendaele is probably better than any track on this album. But look, I feel like I'm being uber negative about this. I want to emphasize that, you know, I'm a huge Maiden fan. My son is called Eddie. Like, that is how deep it runs. So I take no pleasure whatsoever in doing this to one of my favourite ever bands. And I do it from a place of love, do you know. It's not from a place of hate that I do this. I mean, just looking around at some of the you've got some really polarising reviews looking around at this. And I've seen there's plenty of 5 out of 5 or 9 out of 10 reviews. I've also seen and heard people giving it an absolute kicking. So, it's interesting. And that's why you come here, because we don't get any payment. We don't take any advertising money. You're getting it from the horse's mouth of two super Maiden fans. So this is what we're here to do.
I'm so nervous right now.
We're not sugaring any pills.
you certainly aren't, that's for sure. Right, go on then, mate. Hit me with it.
Out of 10.
Okay, that's better than I thought you would give it, actually.
What did you think?
I thought you were going to be lower. I honestly did. And my thinking was initially, when I first heard the album, I initially thought, he's not going to like this. He's knowing that, you know, you're a big fan of the earlier Powerslave era, things like that. That's more your forte, and I thought, he's not going to like this. And then
it's fair to say, like, from our own conversations, I know you liked the Book of Souls much more than I did.
Yeah.
So I think you're already onto that line of inquiry, just knowing that. So, I mean, it's not a 6 out of 10 album, but I'm sorry. When I see the 10 out of 10s, I just cannot stomach that.
For me, it's an 8 out of 10. And the reasoning behind that, there's a few reasons. Firstly, the reason it's not higher is because of the length of it. And I think, and as I said before, I think the songwriting is not as good as Book of Souls. That being said, Maiden, and I'm a big fan of that Brave New World on era. I love the, me being a big prog fan, I love the elements they bring into the latter album. So I'm naturally going to be a sucker for the longer tracks. And I think like Hell and Earth, Parchment, they really do appeal to me a lot more. And what you said about seeing the whole album, you wouldn't like to see it all live. Would I like to see it all live? Yes, if I could see Maiden, say, a month later and then see him do a great... I wouldn't like to see Maiden play Senjutsu in full and then not see Maiden for another 2 years. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
I remember seeing them on the Final Frontier tour, and they played Wild Wind Blows live, which was incredible, and they played, I think, two or three more tracks off it, but then the rest, they really did mix it up. They had, like, Runs to Hills and had a good catering for all. I just think, and Maiden have done this before with A Matter of Life and Death, they played it in its entirety, and you're 100% right that these, not casual, that's the wrong word, but these, no, I suppose casual, like wearing the Trooper t-shirts, they would not appreciate seeing an album like this in full, because they would want to see Runs to the Hills, Hallowed Be Thy Name, etc., etc. So that is my answer on that. But yeah, look, I love Maiden. We love Maiden. It's another great, for me, it's a great album. Album for you, it's a good one. And I think throwing two or three of these songs in the set list will do no harm at all. So that's where we stand. And we will leave it at that, because otherwise we'll be here for hours. That's Iron Maiden's new album, Senjutsu. Go and enjoy it. Right, that was 44 minutes on one album. That's the longest we've ever done.
It's like a double album.
It was like a double podcast. Double podcast. And moving on to our second review and final one of the night is by another British band we discussed earlier, Employed to Serve, and their fourth album, Conquering. And we discussed the album with Justine Sammy, as I said earlier. Lovely people. So we're going to go straight into this one. This is their fourth album after Eternal Forward Motion. Notoriously edging on the mathcore, gent hardcore mixing bowl in their earlier days. And this album, Conquering Benny, they've gone a different path, haven't they?
Yeah, they've had a really interesting progression, have Employed to Serve. Like you say, it started off really spiky, mathy, hardcore. Then they certainly brought in bigger sounding, more metal, certainly Warmth of Dying Sun. Eternal Forward Motion for me was an incredible step, really helping to create music that kind of echoed the stage, the bigger stages that they're playing on, yet retaining that furious anger that they still held in them. And this is a further kind of development, so to speak, and they have moved one step yet again away from the hardcore and more into the metal subgenre. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%. How does that feel for you? I mean, you're definitely more of a... You're a bigger Employed to Serve fan than I am. That's for sure. How did you feel about this progression and change up?
I think they do it very well. And I think they've really grown into their songwriting prowess. I think they're excellent songwriters in what they do. Sammy, especially, in terms of the riffs he cooks up, the way the songs are structured, the dynamics of the whole album. So for me, the absolute sweet spot in terms of that, the two things, the kind of Venn diagram, so to speak, was Eternal Forward Motion. This has moved one step more towards a metal kind of framework. And how do I feel about it? Look, I think it's great that they're still progressing and moving forward as a band, doing what they want to do, and also broadening their appeal to a bigger audience.
And they're still a relatively young band, aren't they? Like four albums in the grand scheme of things is not massive. So they've probably only just really started to use a anatomy, like just sort of hit puberty and starting to flourish. But yeah, for four bands, but I mean, make no mistake about it, Employed to Serve are a British treasure, and whenever they've played live or whenever they're on social media or interviews, they are such a well-loved band. And I think that's probably down to the characters that they are, but also I think with the songwriting, because they have a really incredible catalogue. And I think of Warmth of the Dying Sun was the first time I heard Employed to Serve. And, you know, when we had the likes of Meshuggah, Tesseract, etc. floating around, being the godfathers, if you will, of that sort of genre. And then Employed to Serve come along with this different tinge of the way of the music. And I absolutely adored Warmth of the Dying Sun. And Count, I Spend My Days is one of my favourite songs of theirs by a long way. So this was a real, real change. And not was it a surprise? Yeah, it probably was to go that far from where they started off. But it is a great change.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of catering, I would say, very well to your tastes.
Yeah, it is. Go on,
I mean, the band themselves make no bones about the fact that they are metal fans. They grew up listening to metal. They grew up in the new metal era. They grew up as huge Slipknot fans. And I think this album is like a love letter to all of those bands, in my opinion. And what makes it very impressive is that they pull it off in a very accomplished way, and they make it sound like Employed to Serve. It's not like they're just kind of completely aping these other bands. They make it still retain enough of their personality and their stamp on it to make it a really accomplished kind of stylistic change for me.
This had exactly the same impact to me, this Employed to Serve album, as when I first heard Slipknot. The debut Slipknot album, which I must have been, what, 14, 15, something like that? Yeah, teenager anyway. And I remember hearing Slipknot the first time and, you know, everything that was going on. And then when I put Conquering on, I got exactly that same feeling of excitement, of, and I don't mean this to be a disservice to him, but the simplistic side of metal. We talk about these days, you know, so many bands are doing so much. We covered Utopia, yeah. The Escape Plan. You know, there's so much going on that you find it's so hard to listen. And I think we were talking about an album last week we covered where you couldn't get into, Between the Buried and Me, another perfect example, where you really have to dig deep and try and, you know, get your head around. Whereas Conquering I put on and just, it was exactly what I wanted. No frills, no, you know, fucking dragons jumping out the PA and all that. It was just pure metal, and it had that template of double bass drumming, the basses, guitars, few solos, and those. And Justine puts an absolute shift on this, and I think has never sounded better.
Yeah, and let's not get this wrong. It is very difficult to achieve what you've just described, to make a accomplished metal record like that makes you want to bang your head. That is apparently simplistic, but I think scratch the surface, there's a lot of moving parts on this album, and I think that is one of my all-time favorite things. I talk about Tesseract doing it a lot with Sonder, is where you get these really complicated bands who are really great musicians who are used to writing these sprawling progressive tracks, but then something clicks and they write really succinct 3.5 minute tracks and use all that creativity and nous, and there's still probably as many moving parts in there, but they've honed it into something that on the face of it, listen to it once and you're like, oh yeah, that's great. But listen to it 10 times and you can hear the kind of, as I say, the innards of the song really can appeal on repeated listens. And I love it when bands can do that.
Yeah, and as I said, that's not a disservice to them. It's been a long time since we've had a straight up metal album where you don't have to concentrate and you can just, I mean, I played this coming back from playing golf the other day. It was like I played the full album. I had it on full blast. The sun was blazing and I was banging my head along to, like you were saying, proper head banging album. You mentioned about the song structures. I think they've absolutely nailed it. Sammy using the clean vocals on tracks such as Mark of the Grave, I think is another extra dimension that they're only going to use further.
Yeah, I mean, to pick up on that, mate, I think that is clearly a very well talked about element of this album, Sammy's increasing vocal role as well as the clean vocals. I mean, for me, like, he's no Bruce Dickinson, you know, he's not going to be clearly the most technically adept, but I think what it does is it brings a whole new element to their sound. And before on Greyer Than you Can Remember, you had Justine's acerbic, brutal, harsh vocal every single track pummeling you into submission. This opens a whole new chapter for them, and I think just opens doors, and I think that is just a great thing.
Yeah, but at the same time as well, I just want to mention the track Sun Up to Sundown still holds that earlier, especially I Spend My Days, that opening, the down-tuned guitars, has that same sort of vibe on it, which I think is absolutely brilliant song. And my other standout, and I said this to the guys when we interviewed, Mark of the Grave, is it is a stand-up metal track. There's no frills, no spills. It is an absolute stomping track, and the juxtaposition between Sammy and Justine's vocals is absolutely wonderful. The video for it is fantastic as well. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. But this is what I mean, where sometimes you just need a straight-up metal song. And I said this to him as well on the interview. They left it so late in the album, but as a single. But I think when I listen to it now, I have this bit of excitement thinking it's coming up soon, rather than it being in the front and it's gone. But those are the two tracks that stand out for me. But there are plenty of others on there that are truly wonderful.
Yeah, I love the Mistake. I love the Slipknot vibes all over that. I mean, it reminds me a bit of Force Fed from the last album, which I loved. I really like the title track as well. I love the pace and the energy on it, the furious anger. As I say, I think what's lovely about this album is, as I say, it's a love letter to all of those bands that we grew up listening to and loving. Slipknot, it will be the most mentioned of those, but I think there's plenty of groove on this album.
Pantera.
Pantera, Lamy G's, plenty of that. They've got that kind of, for certainly Sun Up Sundown, that kind of big Sepultura-esque riff, that slow, almost a bit like Deftones in a way, that really slow, almost doomy style to it. So they've just got all those bands that we kind of have loved over the years. And as I say, if it was easy to do this, every mug would be doing it, but it's actually very difficult to not only kind of bring in elements of all those bands, but make it sound like your own, continue to make it sound like your own band, and make actually really good songs as well with it. So I think that's a triple compliment to them from me.
I am so excited about seeing them on this tour with Gojira, because I think Gojira are going to have a run for their money when, you know, when I'm sat here thinking about Conquering, they've just released, compared to Fortitude, which of course you've just released, I pick Conquering.
Really?
Every day of the week. You know my thoughts on Fortitude. I wasn't a big fan of it, but when you put them side by side and the excitement and furiosity from the crowd, you're going to get more reaction to Conquering. Now, obviously, Gojira are going to have Flying Whales and Heaviest Matter, etc., etc., but I think Gojira are really going to run for their money on this tour.
Yeah, what a compliment. What a compliment to one of the greatest live metal bands of the modern era to say they're going to have a run for their money. I mean, the other thing that I would really truly like to see is an Employed Surf headliner, because I mean, like you've said it, they've now got four albums. They've got a stack of material that will build a really strong hour-long set list. I'm not sure 25 minutes of them is enough.
No. Are they playing Download? Like, even a festival slot would be... Listen, they could fill a 25-minute slot with... I mean, they could go Universal Chokehold, Exist, Sun to Sundown, Mistake, We Don't Need You, Mark of the Grave, Conquering, and Walk Off, and that would be an unbelievable show. And that's just the latest album. We haven't even talked about Return of Full Motion, etc. But I really have to take my hat off. I wasn't expecting this. It's a lovely surprise from lovely people as well. And I'm not just saying this because we have interviewed them, because I'm not being biased. And on this show, we always will be, you know, we will be as true as we can.
See the Iron Maiden review.
See Maiden. See Venice Slag Iron Maiden previous. No, but it's not just because we've interviewed them, but this album really is something very, very good. And I'm really excited about seeing your rating. But I think...
Yeah.
Is it me to go first?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to quickly, not caveat this, but last time when we covered Death Heaven...
Yes.
And I gave it a 7. And I said it would have been a 6 if it was my personal choice.
Yes.
I appreciate the songwriting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay? Good man. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to come round on Employed to Serve on a different angle. And I think this wouldn't this wouldn't be my go-to every day. Do you know, if I was getting up in the morning, I'd probably, or if I was looking for an album to listen to and something comfortable with, I'd go for Opeth or Maiden or something like that. I wouldn't necessarily go for the metal, using inverted commas, genre. But at the same time, I have to give the album credit where it's due as a album in this world. And I want to just back a few things up quickly before I give my rating. So we talk about length of albums a lot. And
we complain about it a lot, don't we?
We see Maiden album previously.
See also Maiden album.
Maiden being 84 minutes. This is 48 minutes, 10 tracks. Oh, sorry, it might be more than 10 tracks. It's 48
11
minutes.
Tracks. Yeah.
Sorry, 11. 48 minutes. It never outstays its welcome, which is always nice when you're not waiting for an album to end because you're fed up with it. Songwriting, absolutely 10 out of 10. We've discussed this, the way the songs fit together. It's not over technical for the sake of it. The riffs is 10. Like, the riffs on this album are just, and I refer to Mark of the Grave again, absolute stomping. Band collectively as a whole, considering they've had new members join over the COVID and some people leave, they record it during COVID. All the challenges they got on, this album for me is a 10 out of 10.
Whoa! Yeah, wow! Mate.
I cannot. I've been so excited about saying this to you, but I can't deny that this album is a 10 out of 10.
Wow! I'm amazed. Good. It's just there is brilliant. Not many of those come about on the hard nose markers and Heavy Matters podcast.
No,
so
I think the last 10 out of 10 I gave was Wilderun's Veil of Imagination, and that's right up my street. So that's why I said, from front to back, this album is so enjoyable, so fun. And now this isn't necessarily to say it would be my album of the year. As I caveat, saying, it's not my go-to, but it's certainly going to be right up there.
So are you saying, is this 10 from a personal or an objective, would you say?
This is an objective.
Objective 10.
Yeah. But that being said, it definitely had a bit of nostalgia for me as well. Remind me of listening to Slipknot for the first time as well. So there is a bit of personal. But that, let's not take away from the fact that this is a fucking fantastic album. So it's a 10 out of 10.
Wow, mate. So I'll do a bit of...
Benny's going to kill the vibe now.
Indexing. So I think I felt... this way, the way you feel about this album, I think I felt it about Eternal Forward Motion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I had that thrill of excitement and that complete haymaker from left field. What have they done? This is incredible. This is hit the absolute sweet spot. And I loved it. It was top 5 in my albums year list that year. And I don't think this is a huge drop off or anything like that. I think the songwriting is on a par, the kind of catchiness and the kind of crowd mass appeal is on a par. But just because I already had that super high with them, this always seems like a little notch below. Does that make sense? I think I'm trying to remember an album.
Heavy caveat you're bringing.
But for me, it's an 8 out of 10, and that is okay. A very high score from Venny.
It is from you. One higher than Maiden, so that says a lot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, mate. If you had a gun to my head and only let me take away one album from this week, it would be the Employed Surf one.
Okay, fair enough.
So yeah, but yeah, I can't remember. I've definitely said this on the show before, where I've had a really exciting feeling about an album. You get it and it's like a brand new feeling you get, and then the next album comes along and it may be equally musically as good and accomplished, but you just don't have that personal kind of frisson of excitement. I don't know.
It was exactly the same, where I had the level of excitement, you've listened to it, and I can't remember what it was, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So it's just that that's the only thing. As I say, Eternal Form of Emotion for me just hit that super sweet spot. But as I say, I think this is as equally good an album as it.
Okay. So we weren't a million miles away, but...
After all that, again, we weren't a million miles.
No, but that's Employed to Serve and the new album, Conquering, is an absolute ripper of an album. It's our first 10 of the year,
nine months in, which is...
Is it the first 10 of the year, mate?
Oh, it is. I think it might be.
Well, I gave Wilderon a 10, but that was technically a release from the year before.
It's a re-release, and I don't think that was this year either.
I think it might have been right at the start of the year.
Maybe it was right at the start of the year.
So, yeah, the first 10. Yep, it's a biggie. So the next show, we are reviewing albums from Rivers of Nihil, Mol, and LLNN. So that's going to be a cheerful show for everyone to tune into. No, but we are interviewing the bassist from Rivers of Nihil tomorrow, so we'll probably get that out before we record the next show and review it. So there's plenty going on as well. Venny has done 3 recent reviews on albums. I've recently put one up there of an Israeli band called Nur, who would be right up your street, mate.
Yeah, very cold Luna.
You've put reviews up there for, remind me,
Spirit Box.
Save me from having to listen to that.
Spirit Box. And then a couple of oldies, actually, that were released well earlier in the year, but I just had to put pen to paper on them. So that is White Void and I can't even pronounce the other one. Inotun or something like that.
Iotun. I've read them all. Very, very well written pieces, mate. They're on the website, www.heavymatters.co.uk. We have plenty more coming, I'm sure, over the years.
I hope so, mate.
There'll be plenty more content. So thank you for joining us. If you want to get your album potentially reviewed by us, you can drop us a mail. We have one in the mailbox, a couple of slid into our DMs that we're going to have a look at over the next few weeks. So if you're a band up and coming, you want us to have a check it out and give it the Heavy Matters review, you can request me or Venny, because you've just referred to the Maiden review previously.
The dove or the hawk.
So thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on the Heavy Matters podcast. We love you.